3. The lady of the castle crossed the high hall slowly, skirts rustling over stone. Her dark skin was deepened with age to the black of an icon. Her fair hair was white. Still she kept the beauty of her lineage. Rokanan bowed and spoke a greeting in the fashion of her people. "Hail, Hallen Lady, Durhal's daughter, Haldra the Fair." "Hail, Rokanan, my guest," she said, looking calmly down at him. Like most Angiar women and all Angiar men, she was considerably taller than he. "Tell me why you go south." She continued to pace slowly across the hall, and Rokanan walked beside her. Around them was dark air and stone, dark tapestry hung on high walls, the cool light of morning from clear story windows slanting across the black of rafters overhead. "I go to find my enemy, lady."
"And when you have found them?"
"I hope to enter their castle, and make use of their message sender to tell the League they are here on this world. They are hiding here, and there is very little chance of their being found. The worlds are thick as sand on the sea beach, but they must be found. They have done harm here, and they would do much worse on other worlds." Haldra nodded her head once.
"Is it true you wish to go lightly with few men?"
"Yes, lady. It is a long way, and the sea must be crossed, and craft, not strength, is my only hope against their strength."
"You will need more than craft, Star-Lord," said the old woman.
"Well, I'll send with you 4 loyal midmen, if that suffices you, and 2 wind steeds, laden, and 6 saddled, and a piece or 2 of silver in case barbarians in the foreign lands want payment for lodging you, and my son Mogian."
"Mogian will come with me."
"These are great gifts, lady, but that is the greatest." She looked at him a minute with her clear, sad, inexorable gaze.
"I am glad it pleases you, Star-Lord."
She resumed her slow walking, and he beside her.
"Mogian desires to go, for love of you and for adventure.
And you, a great lord on a very perilous mission, desire his company. So I think it is surely his way to follow. But I tell you now, this morning in the long hall, so that you may remember and not fear my blame if you return, I do not think he will come back with you. But, lady, he is the heir of Hallen."
She went in silence a while, turned at the end of the room under a time-darkened tapestry of winged giants fighting fair-haired men, and finally spoke again.
"Hallen will find other heirs." Her voice was calm and bitter cold.
"You Star-Lords are among us again, bringing new ways and wars. Reohan is dust. How long will Hallen stand? The world itself has become a grain of sand on the shore of night. All things change now. But I am certain still of one thing, that there is darkness over my lineage. My mother, whom you knew, was lost in the forests in her madness. My father was killed in battle, my husband by treachery. And when I bore a son, my spirit grieved amid my joy, foreseeing his life would be short. That is no grief to him. He is an Angia. He wears the double swords. But my part of the darkness is to rule a failing domain alone, to live and live and outlive them all." She was silent again a minute. "You may need more treasure than I can give you to buy your life or your way. Take this. To you I give it, Rokanan, not to Mogian. There is no darkness on it to you. Was it not yours once, in the city across the night? To us it has been only a burden and a shadow. Take it back, Star-Lord. Use it for a ransom or a gift. She unclasped from her neck the gold and the great blue stone of the necklace that had cost her mother's life, and held it out in her hand to Rokanan. He took it, hearing almost with terror the soft, cold clash of the golden links, and lifted his eyes to Haldra. She faced him, very tall, her blue eyes dark in the dark, clear air of the hall. "Now, take my son with you, Star-Lord, and follow your way. May your enemy die without sons." Torchlight and smoke and hurrying shadows in the castle flight court, voices of beasts and men, racket and confusion, all dropped away in a few wingbeats of the striped steed Rokanan rode. Behind them now Halon lay, a faint spot of light on the dark sweep of the hills, and there was no sound but a rushing of air as the wide half-seen wings lifted and beat down. The east was pale behind them, and the great star burned like a bright crystal, heralding the sun. But it was long before daybreak. Day and night and the twilights were stately and unhurried on this planet that took 30 hours to turn. And the pace of the seasons also was large. This was the dawn of the vernal equinox, and 400 days of spring and summer lay ahead. "They'll sing songs of us in the high castles," said Keo, riding postillion behind Rokanan. "They'll sing how the Wanderer and his companions rode south across the sky in the darkness before the spring." He laughed a little. Beneath them the hills and rich plains of Angian unfolded like a landscape painted on gray silk, brightening little by little, at last glowing vivid with colors and shadows as the lordly sun rose behind them. At noon they rested a couple of hours by the river whose southwest course they were following to the sea. At dusk they flew down to a little castle on a hilltop like all Angiar castles, near a bend of the same river. There they were made welcome by the lord of the place and his household. Curiosity obviously itched in him at the sight of a Fian traveling by windsteed, along with the lord of Halon, 4 midmen, and one who spoke with a queer accent, dressed like a lord, but wore no swords and was white-faced like a midman. To be sure, there was more intermingling between the two castes, the Angiar and Olgiar, than most Angiar like to admit. There were light-skinned warriors and gold-haired servants, but this wanderer was altogether too anomalous. Wanting no further rumor of his presence on the planet, Rokanan said nothing, and their host dared ask no questions of the heir of Halon, so if he ever found out who his strange guests had been, it was from minstrels singing the tale years later. The next day passed the same for the 7 travelers, riding the wind above the lovely land. They spent that night in an Olgior village by the river, and on the 3rd day came over country new even to Mogian. The river, curving away to the south, lay in loops and oxbows. The hills ran out into long plains, and far ahead was a mirrored, pale brightness in the sky. Late in the day they came to a castle set alone on a white bluff, beyond which lay a long reach of lagoons and gray sand, and the open sea. Dismounting, stiff and tired and his head ringing from wind and motion, Rokanan thought it the sorriest Angiar stronghold he had yet seen, a cluster of huts like wet chickens bunched under the wings of a squat, seedy-looking fort. Midmen, pale and short-bodied, peered at them from the straggling lanes. "They look as if they're bred with clay folk," said Mogian. "This is the gate, and the place is called Tolan, if the wind hasn't carried us astray." "Ho, lords of Tolan, the guest is at your gate." There was no sound within the castle. "The gate of Tolan swings in the wind," said Keo. And they saw that indeed the portal of bronze-bound wood sagged on its hinges, knocking in the cold sea wind that blew up through the town. Mogian pushed it open with his sword point. Inside was darkness, a scuttering rustle of wings, and a dank smell. The lords of Tolan did not wait for their guests, said Mogian. Well, Jahan, talk to these ugly fellows and find us lodging for the night. The young midman turned to speak to the townsfolk who had gathered at the far end of the castle forecourt to stare. One of them got up the courage to hitch himself forward, bowing and going sideways like some seaweedy beach creature, and spoke humbly to Jahan. Rokanan could partly follow the Olgior dialect, and gathered that the old man was pleading that the village had no proper housing for Pedanar, whatever they were. The tall midman Raho joined Jahan and spoke fiercely, but the old man only hitched and bowed and mumbled, till at last Mogian strode forward. He could not, by the Angiar code, speak to the serfs of a strange domain, but he unsheathed one of his swords and held it up, shining in the cold sea light. The old man spread out his hands and with a wail turned and shuffled down into the darkening alleys of the village. The travelers followed, the furled wings of their steeds brushing the low reed roofs on both sides. Keo, what are Pedanar? The little man smiled. Jahan, what is that word, Pedanar? The young midman, a good-natured, candid fellow, looked uneasy.
Well, Lord, a Pedan is one who walks among men.
Rokanan nodded, snapping up even this scrap. While he had been a student of the species instead of its ally, he had kept seeking for their religion. They seemed to have no creeds at all, yet they were quite credulous. They took spells, curses, and strange powers, as a matter of fact, and their relation to nature was intensely animistic. But they had no gods. This word, at last, smelled of the supernatural. It did not occur to him at the time that the word had been applied to himself. It took three of the sorry huts to lodge the seven of them, and the wind steeds, too big to fit any house of the village, had to be tied outside. The beasts huddled together, ruffling their fur against the sharp sea wind. Rokanan's striped steed scratched at the wall and complained in a mewing snarl till Keo went out and scratched its ears. "Worse awaits him soon, poor beast," said Mogian, sitting beside Rokanan by the stove pit that warmed the hut. "They hate water." "You said at Hallen that they wouldn't fly over the sea, and these villagers surely have no ships that would carry them. How are we going to cross the channel?"
"Have you your picture of the land?" Mogian inquired. The Angiar had no maps, and Mogian was fascinated by the geographic surveys maps in the handbook. Rokanan got the book out of the old leather pouch he had carried from world to world, and which contained the little equipment he had had with him in Hallen when the ship had been bombed. Handbook and notebooks, suit and gun, medical kit and radio, a Terran chess set, and a battered volume of Hainish poetry. At first he had kept the necklace with its sapphire in with this stuff, but last night, oppressed by the value of the thing, he had sewn the sapphire pendant up in a little bag of soft barrelor hide and strung the necklace around his own neck, under his shirt and cloak, so that it looked like an amulet and could not be lost unless his head was, too. Mogian followed with a long, hard forefinger the contours of the two western continents where they faced each other. The far south of Angian, with its two deep gulfs and a fat promontory between them reaching south, and across the channel the northernmost cape of the southwest continent, which Mogian called Fiern. "Here we are," Rokanan said, setting a fish vertebra from their supper on the tip of the promontory. "And here, if these cringing fish-eating yokels speak truth, is a castle called Plenot." Mogian put a second vertebra a half-inch east of the first one and admired it. "A tower looks very like that from above. When I get back to Hallen, I'll send out 100 men on steeds to look down on the land, and from their pictures we'll carve in stone a great picture of all Angian. Now, at Plenot there will be ships, probably the ships of this place Tolan as well as their own. There was a feud between these two poor lords, and that's why Tolan stands now full of wind and night, So the old man told Yahan.
Will Plenot lend us ships?
Plenot will lend us nothing. The lord of Plenot is an errant.
This meant, in the complex code of relationships among Angiar domains, a lord banned by the rest, an outlaw, not bound by the rules of hospitality, reprisal, or restitution.
He has only 2 windsteeds, said Mogian, unbuckling his sword belt for the night, and his castle, they say, is built of wood.
Next morning, as they flew down the wind to that wooden castle, a guard spotted them almost as they spotted the tower. The 2 steeds of the castle were soon aloft, circling the tower. Presently they could make out little figures with bows leaning from window slits. Clearly an errant lord expected no friends. Rokanan also realized now why Angiar castles were roofed over, making them cavernous and dark inside, but protecting them from an airborne enemy.
Plenot was a little place, ruder even than Tolan, lacking a village of midmen, perched out on a spit of black boulders above the sea. But, poor as it was, Mogian's confidence that 6 men could subdue it seemed excessive. Rokanan checked the thigh straps of his saddle, shifted his grip on the long air combat lance Mogian had given him, and cursed his luck and himself. This was no place for an ethnologist of 43.
Mogian, flying well ahead on his black steed, raised his lance and yelled. Rokanan's mount put down its head and beat into full flight. The black and gray wings flashed up and down like veins. The long, thick, light body was tense, thrumming with a powerful heartbeat. As the wind whistled past, the thatched tower of Plenot seemed to hurtle toward them, circled by 2 rearing griffins. Rokanan crouched down on the wind steed's back, his long lance couched ready. A happiness, an old delight was swelling in him. He laughed a little, riding the wind. Closer and closer came the rocking tower and its 2 winged guards, and suddenly, with a piercing falsetto shout, Mogian hurled his lance, a bolt of silver, through the air. It hit one rider square in the chest, breaking his thigh straps with the force of the blow, and hurled him over his steed's haunches in a clear, seemingly slow arc, 300 feet down to the breakers, creaming quietly on the rocks. Mogian shot straight on past the riderless steed and opened combat with the other guard, fighting in close, trying to get a sword stroke past the lance which his opponent did not throw, but used for jabbing and parrying. The 4 midmen on their white and gray mounts hovered nearby like terrible pigeons, ready to help but not interfering with their lord's duel, circling just high enough that the archers below could not pierce the steed's leathern belly mail. But all at once, all 4 of them, with that nerve-rending falsetto yell, closed in on the duel. For a moment there was a knot of white wings and glittering steel hanging in midair. From the knot dropped a figure that seemed to be trying to lie down on the air, turning this way and that with loose limbs seeking comfort, till it struck the castle roof and slid to a hard bed of rock below. Now Rokanan saw why they had joined in the duel. The guard had broken its rules and struck at the steed instead of the rider. Mogian's mount, purple blood staining one black wing, was straining inland to the dunes. Ahead of him shot the midmen, chasing the 2 riderless steeds, which kept circling back, trying to get to their safe stables in the castle. Rokanan headed them off, driving his steed right at them over the castle roofs. He saw Raho catch one with a long cast of his rope, and at the same moment felt something sting his leg. His jump startled his excited steed. He reined in too hard, and the steed arched up its back, and for the first time since he had ridden it began to buck, dancing and prancing all over the wind above the castle. Arrows played around him like reversed rain. The midmen and Mogian, mounted on a wild-eyed yellow steed, shot past him, yelling and laughing. His mount straightened out and followed them. "Catch, Star-Lord!" Yahan yelled, and a comet with a black tail came arching at him.
He caught it in self-defense, found it a lighted resin torch, and joined the others in circling the tower at close range, trying to set its thatch roof and wooden beams alight.
"You've got an arrow in your left leg!" Mogian called as he passed Rokanan, who laughed hilariously, and hurled his torch straight into a window slit from which an archer leaned. "Good shot!" cried Mogian, and came plummeting down onto the tower roof, re-arising from it in a rush of flame. Yahan and Raho were back with more sheaves of smoking torches they had set alight on the dunes, and were dropping these wherever they saw reed or wood to set a fire. The tower was going up now in a roaring fountain of sparks, and the windsteeds, infuriated by constant reining in and by the sparks stinging their coats, kept plunging down toward the roofs of the castle, making a coughing roar very horrible to hear. The upward rain of arrows had ceased, and now a man scurried out into the forecourt, wearing what looked like a wooden salad bowl on his head, and holding up in his hands what Rokanan first took for a mirror, then saw was a bowl full of water. Jerking at the reins of the yellow beast, which was still trying to get back down to its stable, Mogian rode over the man and called, "Speak quick! My men are lighting new torches."
"Of what domain, lord?"
"Halan."
"The Lord Errant of Plenat craves time to put out the fires, Halan Lord.
In return for the lives and treasures of the men of Tolan, I grant it."
"So be it," cried the man,
and still holding up the full bowl of water, he trotted back into the castle. The attackers withdrew to the dunes and watched the Plenat folk rush out to man their pump and set up a bucket brigade from the sea. The tower burned out, but they kept the walls and hall standing. There were only a couple of dozen of them, counting some women. When the fires were out, a group of them came on foot from the gate, over the rocky spit, and up the dunes. In front walked a tall, thin man with the walnut skin and fiery hair of the Angiar. Behind him came two soldiers, still wearing their salad bowl helmets, and behind them six ragged men and women staring about sheepishly. The tall man raised in his two hands the clay bowl filled with water.
"I am Ogerin of Plenat, Lord Errant of this domain."
"I am Mogian, Hala's heir."
"The lives of the Tolan folk are yours, lord."
He nodded to the ragged group behind him.
"No treasure was in Tolan."
"There were two longships, Errant.
From the north, the dragon flies, seeing all things," Ogorin said rather sourly. "The ships of Tolan are yours,
and you will have your wind steeds back when the ships are at Tolan Wharf," said Mogian, magnanimous.
"By what other lord had I the honor to be defeated?" Ogorin asked with a glance at Rokanan, who wore all the gear and bronze armor of an Angiar warrior, but no swords. Mogian, too, looked at his friend, and Rokanan responded with the first alias that came to mind, the name Keo called him by. "Olhor, the Wanderer." Ogorin gazed at him curiously, then bowed to both and said,
"The bowl is full, lords.
Let the water not be spilled, and the pact not be broken." Ogorin turned and strode with his two men back to his smoldering fort, not giving a glance to the freed prisoners huddled on the dune. To these, Mogian said only, "Lead home my wind steed, his wing was hurt," and remounting the yellow beast from Plenat, he took off. Rokanan followed, looking back at the sad little group as they began their trudge home to their own ruinous domain. By the time he reached Tolan, his battle spirits had flagged, and he was cursing himself again. There had, in fact, been an arrow sticking out of his left calf when he dismounted on the dune, painless till he had pulled it out without stopping to see if the point were barbed, which it was. The Angiar certainly did not use poison, but there was always blood poisoning. Swayed by his companion's genuine courage, he had been ashamed to wear his protective and almost invisible impermasuit for this foray. Owning armor that could withstand a laser gun, he might die in this damned hovel from the scratch of a bronze-headed arrow. And he had set off to save a planet when he could not even save his own skin. The oldest midman from Holland, a quiet, stocky fellow named Eot, came in and almost wordlessly, gentle-mannered, knelt and washed and bandaged Rokanan's hurt. Mogian followed, still in battle dress, looking 10 feet tall with his crested helmet, and 5 feet wide across the shoulders, exaggerated by the stiff, wing-like shoulder board of his cape. Behind him came Keo, silent as a child among the warriors of a stronger race. Then Jahan came in, and Raho, and young Bien, so that the hut creaked at the seams when they all squatted around the stove pit. Jahan filled 7 silver-bound cups, which Mogian gravely passed around. They drank. Rokanan began to feel better. Mogian inquired of his wound, and Rokanan felt much better. They drank more, Vascan, while scared and admiring faces of villagers peered momentarily in the doorway from the twilight lane outside. Rokanan felt benevolent and heroic. They ate and drank more, and then in the airless hut reeking with smoke and fried fish and harness grease and sweat, Jahan stood up with a lyre of bronze with silver strings and sang. He sang of Durhold of Hallen, who set free the prisoners of Korhalt in the days of the Red Lord by the marshes of Born. And when he had sung the lineage of every warrior in that battle and every stroke he struck, he sang straight on the freeing of the Tolan folk and the burning of Plenot Tower, of the Wanderer's torch blazing through a rain of arrows, of the great stroke struck by Mogian, Hala's heir, the lance cast across the wind, finding its mark like the unerring lance of Hendin in the days of old. Rokanan sat drunk and contented, riding the river of song, feeling himself now wholly committed, sealed by his shed blood to this world to which he had come a stranger across the gulfs of night. Only beside him, now and then, he sensed the presence of the little Fian, smiling, alien, serene.